Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Welcome to Becoming Heisenberg. It's Entertainment Talks podcast for Breaking Bad on AMC and Netflix. I'm your host Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Excellent. This is for season 3, episode 5, called Mass. What did you think of this episode?
I like this episode. We're sort of getting to the point where he's, you know, he's coming back to cooking, which is what we want to see on Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. And we actually get the big reveal of the new kitchen as well, which is awesome, because you know that becomes quite a big thing this season.
Oh yeah.
So that you know, I like the fact that that's shown up. Lots of stuff with the RVs as well. Did slightly confusing when it opens. I hate it when they do that as the cold open, because it's you know they kind of do it with a flashback and you're like, wait, is this playing the right episode? Have I missed something?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did that as well sometimes. Yeah.
We get Jesse's friends are back, Skinny Pete, who we haven't seen in about 7 episodes, and it's the last appearance of Kobo as well, or Combo,
whatever Combo, I think. Yeah.
Combo, yes. Last appearance by him, I think, on the show. So I like the title as well, because it's called Mass, this episode. Which, if you remember going back to the start of season 3, there was an episode called No Mass, which is Spanish for no more. So Mass is obviously the Spanish for more, which makes sense given what does this episode. So, yeah, I rather like that. And, it's overall really, really good episode. I really like this one.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, the Super Lab, seeing that again was great. Seeing Gus and Walt interact is always really, really good. And I would call him Walt and not Heisenberg in some of these scenes. He hasn't completely made that transition yet, but he's getting there. He's getting there with his Heisenberg thing. The Jesse Walt stuff was good again. I love the interactions between, well, I would say the 4 of them, but Mike stays a bit quiet sometimes when it's Walt, Jesse, I said Bob, that's the actor's name, Sol, and, I was just thinking of Sol there, and I was like, this guy's got 3 names, which one do I use in this situation? But Sol, and then Mike, and again, like I kind of said last week, with some of the things that happened in that episode,
there's a con I suppose maybe it's different on a rewatch because you know it's gonna, I'll use the word work out in the way it sort of supposed to.
Yeah.
Obviously we know what's gonna happen with that, but it's, I can always almost take a more relaxing comedy approach as to, oh, that in terms of that, okay, they're falling out, but it's gonna be fine, you know, or at least as fine as it relatively can be in this show. But because you've got the capabilities of Walt and Jesse to have that comedic back and forth, not like a comedic duo, but the we're gonna moan at each other, but it's gonna be a bit funny. And then you've got Bob Odenkirk's soul in the middle of them, he's trying to sort of be the anchor to figure it all out. I think is a really great combination. Obviously, we're gonna see that quite a lot more. And then Mike's there to sort of break it up if it just gets, you know, too much. So it's another surprise, surprise. It's another great episode of Breaking Bad. So
Yes.
there we go. Speaking of AMC, you had something you messaged me about yesterday.
Oh yeah. For the people in the UK, there was some interesting little bit of news that popped up in that we've always talked about the AMC channel basically being useless in the UK because of the fact that it is buried under a licensing deal with BT. So, for the like six people that have the BT channel or they get their TV through BT TV, the only AMC channel has been on there, and it also doesn't have a lot of the AMC stuff on it. So like the Walking Dead spin-offs haven't been on it anyway, and it's felt a bit like they're maybe stockpiling some of their shows because Lucky Hank, which is the new Bob Odenkirk series, and Interview with the Vampire, all the Walking Dead spin-offs, none of that stuff, none of the recent stuff on AMC has actually launched anywhere in the UK. The news that came out a couple of days ago, yesterday, was the apparently the AMC channel is being removed from the BT platform at the end of September, on September 28th. They've not said anything much about it other than it's been taken off the BT network. It sounds like it's possibly being closed down entirely. That could be just because it's bleeding money for them and there's no real purpose to it being there because, I mean, it could be just the deals run out. I don't know exactly, but there is a possibility that maybe they're taking it off there because they don't want it competing with a streaming service. Because the other possibility is they're hoarding shows to launch AMC Plus, which they have done in some other countries. Although where they have launched AMC Plus, they're also not necessarily showing everything that they own on AMC Plus. They have been selling some of their stuff to other networks. So I don't know. It's weird the way that AMC operate, but with any luck, the closure of that means that they are possibly going to launch AMC Plus in the UK. That's my hope. We have no confirmation one way or another. All we do know is that the AMC linear channel, which is on BT TV, is shutting down. So we'll have to wait and see what happens, and see if they make any actual announcements about it, because they've not said one way or another anything about a streaming service. There was talk about them trying to expand that streaming service in more locations, and the UK would seem like an obvious location to do that, likely as something like a add-on to Amazon, channel, or is it standalone service? I mean, there's various ways they do it. Lionsgate is a standalone service and an add-on to Amazon as well. So, you never know. They might do a deal with Sky, which is what they did with the Paramount Plus channel. So I don't know at the moment, but
It's a pointer, isn't it? It's a, you know, bit of an update, which is good.
yeah, I mean, all we know at the moment is the channel itself is going to be shut down, which is in itself is neither here nor there because it really wasn't available to many people, and I can't imagine the viewing figures are particularly high, and it may just be the fact that they're shutting it down because it's a complete drain on money for them, but I don't.
Most people that I know, at least in this country, who have still got like what I would describe as cable boxes, either have Virgin or Sky. I do actually know two people that have got the BT box. Whether they're aware of the AMC channel or watch Walking Dead or whatever, I don't know. But there's only a couple of people I know that have got. See, you said five people. There's two that I know. So,
yes.
But actually, one of them is an old friend I haven't seen for a while, so I don't know if they've still got BT. But anyway, that's good news to me. I think that's good news. It makes sense to do that. I mean, we live in a streaming day and age. The only other thing I can think that they might do is, let's say, with what's an example, like the Sci-Fi Channel or something, where that's broadcast via streaming, but then it has like a catch-up service. If they were to do that on somewhere, if they were to move the channel somewhere, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, the other option is they move the channel over onto somewhere like Sky and actually start putting stuff on it. But that would seem like an odd way to go, given that they have a streaming service already. They've got a pile of content which they haven't sold anywhere else and they could potentially put on there. And why would you put out a linear channel onto Sky when you could just expand your own streaming service? Like what Disney did. I mean, Disney basically launched Disney Plus and then took away all the Disney channels, because why would you pay Sky for a linear Disney channel? When you can just launch Disney Plus and put everything on there, you know, because I think the biggest selling point that AMC has is the fact that they have all the Walking Dead shows. And yes, one of them was on Disney Plus. That's purely because they own the license from the fact that Fox used to run it before Disney shut down their Fox channel. So assuming they've got the license back for that, I mean, you've got, Fear, which they've always had control over. You've got the main Walking Dead, which, I mean, is an old show now anyway. But they've got the Daryl Dixon series coming up. They've got Dead City, which hasn't aired anywhere. You've got Interview with the Vampire. You've got Mayfair Witches. There's Dark Winds as well, which is another one of their shows. Lucky Hank. Ride with Norman Reedus, which Talking Dead as well is on there. There's the new Orphan Black Echo series coming up either later this year or next year. You've got the Rick and Michonne series coming up. There's a number of other things as well. So, I mean, there is quite a lot.
Yeah, it's quite a few shows, yeah.
You know, plus all their back catalogue of stuff as well. So there's enough new things, I think, to, if you launched it as a sort of, like the Lionsgate Plus thing is, which is £5 a month, if you launched it at that sort of price level, you know, I think there's enough, particularly for Walking Dead fans, that they would be prepared to probably go on and just add it to their package. I mean, it may be one of those things that you add on for a few months and then turn off and then turn back on again when new shows come out. But I think, you know, at that sort of price point, it would make sense to launch that. As I say, we don't know that that is what they're planning to do. It could be that they're just not going to launch it anywhere and they end up selling the show somewhere else. But it seems odd that you've got huge things like Dead City and Daryl Dixon and all that sort of stuff, and even Interview with the Vampire, which is a huge property, and wasn't sold to any network or streaming service, and that it just seemed like they're purposely not letting those be sold anywhere else.
Definitely. Well, so what was the date? 28th of September.
28th of September it gets turned off. As I say, not said anything about actually launching a streaming service over here.
No,
things possibly point towards that, but they've not made any official announcement about it.
All right, we shall see. But I think that's good news, and we'll see what happens, I guess, after that date. So
it's good news, or no news for
Well, it's some news which is good news. That's how I'm sort of taking it,
Yes.
rather than these shows just sitting there doing nothing. So, all right,
Yes.
let's take a break, do some housekeeping. We'll come back and get into the recap. See you in a minute. All right. So recently on Entertainment Talk, I went and saw a film yesterday. It was called Gran Turismo, obviously based on the PlayStation game series and also based on a true story as well. I really liked it quite a lot, which is always a good thing. I wasn't quite sure how good it was going to be. There were some slow parts of the film, but it really, really picked up in the second half, and I gave it a light must see. There's, I guess, technically a spoiler part in the second half of the podcast, but it's based on a true story, so do with that information what you will. But a spoiler free section at the start if you want to know just my general opinion and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, Gran Turismo film. Interesting, interesting times. Manchester United are back, so is the Premier League, and also the Lionesses are in the World Cup final. Lots of stuff happening with football at the moment. And apparently City won the Super Cup yesterday, which I forgot was happening. But cool. Anyway, Man United beat Wolves by 1-0. Bit of a scrappy game, bit of a sort of game where the team wasn't quite awake. That's how I would describe it. Not tired, just not yet awake. Which is sort of what pre-season is supposed to be for, but we go on. Man United next play Tottenham, Harry Kane-less Tottenham, on Saturday. So we'll see how all of that goes. But yeah, the Premier League is back, and there's quite a few games left to go. On Gaming Talk last week, we talked about Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, got its full announcement. Obviously, these sorts of games always get rumoured and that kind of stuff beforehand. Sledgehammer Games is going to be developing, or leading development. Infinity Ward is going to be co-developing it. There are quite a lot of things within the development of Modern Warfare 3 that have never happened in the 16-year cycle that Call of Duty has been actively going on. So I discussed all those. I also talked about Rockstar as well, with regards to their Red Dead Redemption 1 port and not remaster or remake, and also what's maybe going on with GTA 6 and all that kind of stuff. So we talked all about that, and there was some Starfield talk as well. Strong must see review for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Thoroughly enjoyed that. I think it's on digital now actually, but I wanted to see it on the big screen, so that was a really good time. So you can check that one out. Over on Watching The Witcher, I'm not going to talk about it in the way we did last week. I did my season 3 review. I think that review is pretty much spoiler free, yeah. So you can check that one out as well if you want to. Obviously, that's Cavill's last season. We know what's going on there. So there's all of that. Although I don't imagine the fourth season is going to be out anytime soon, because obviously what's going on with all the strikes and stuff at the moment. Over on the Gaming Talk side, a week before that, we talked about The Last Hope, Battlefield, and no hit runs of like Soulsborne like games and stuff. There's also my United cast preview if you still want to check that out. Obviously, there's a lot of the season still left to go, the transfer window's still open, all that kind of stuff as well. What else is there? I did a podcast called The Current Problems Marvel and DC Face. They do face some of the same problems, but also different problems as well, because they're both in sort of different states and everything. So there was that one. Alright, that's what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. In a flashback, it is revealed that when Walter White gave Jesse Pinkman his savings to buy an RV, not the greatest of ideas, he spent nearly all of it partying the night away at a strip club with Combo and Skinny Pete. The following morning, Jesse panics when he realises, oops, I've made a mistake, and that he only has 1,400 left of the... was it 7,000 or something? 5,000, I think it was. Something like that. Left to buy an RV, but Combo bails him out by selling him his mother's RV for the remainder of the money. Obviously, he'd make a profit from that because it's not his anyway. So, yeah. Again, yeah, I kind of was like, oh, Combo's back? Like, wasn't he dead? And
yeah,
even though we've seen the show before, it's one of them kinds of things where you have to check the... you double check the episode. I guess this is the RV origin story flashback,
yeah,
sort of thing. And I'd forgotten this opening was a thing, and I'd forgotten about this whole story. Obviously, we see Hank getting involved in this later on as well. So again, you remember where these characters end up and stuff. I remember what happens to Hank and all these other people. But I forgot about this particular storyline. So it's interesting to sort of experience this again. We could talk about obviously the bit with the mother later on with Hank, which I thought was kind of sad and stuff. But I was kind of watching this and it's like, you know, boys will be boys, I suppose. You know, you give a young man like Jesse money sometimes, not with every guy his age, but some of them. And this isn't just a case of, oh, here's a bunch of money for you. It's like, no, Walter's given you this money to do this particular thing and realizes he's made a mistake. Which does kind of go to show a little bit. I mean, you look at Jesse in the, let's say, in the main part of the episode, the current Jesse, and in this one, he has changed a little bit. I mean, he's still got kind of a somewhat reckless side to himself, but he's not this same guy, at least anymore, I think. And there's been obviously several things that have changed him as a person. So, what do you think of the opening here?
I say, kind of threw me when it first opened. It was like, wait, have I got hit like an old episode or something? But yeah, so there's that. And then I realized what was going on. It's like, okay, yes. Because it's amazing how you completely forget, because obviously I've seen all these episodes before, but yes. But yeah, the origin story of the RV, basically, as you say, with that. So a combo kind of goes, oh, I know a guy, and it's like, you can get me an RV at this time in the morning with $1,400, really. And they don't actually explain at that point that he's selling his mother's RV, but you do kind of understand that there's something slightly shady going on, because he's like, you need to take it right now. When you know, so clearly there was something shady going on. But yeah, so yeah, it's a good opening, that, and it's you know, that it does, like you say, show that difference of where Jesse was when we first met him, of being this sort of, like, you know, drug dealing party animal, and he's matured into a very different character. But I mean, you know, he's weirdly more responsible, I mean, now than he was. So yeah, it is an interesting juxtaposition to sort of see that version of him compared to the version we have now.
It's interesting. I was just thinking about this just now as well, because we're talking about the old and the new Jesse. Because you get some discussion between Gus and Walt, I think, in this episode and the last one, of obviously Gus and not Bob. Why do I keep calling him Bob? Sol. Bob Odenkirk is the actor. Of Sol. It's because Sol's got too many names. At this point, but yeah. When Gus and Sol are trying to kind of get Walt and Jesse back together, obviously Mike's doing his bit as well. But it's interesting, kind of looking at Mike as well. He's not, I wouldn't describe him as laid back, but if you think about in the series how he operates compared to almost everybody else, he's definitely the most sort of, he'll sit back, observe, and then intervene when he feels he needs to, but he won't get involved. Like if Mike's got a scene where he's really talking a lot or something, it means almost more, I suppose, because otherwise he's just sort of like, not that that takes away from his character or anything. That's just sort of what he does. And you see a bit of that in Better Call Saul as well. But yeah, when they're trying to get Walt and Jesse back together, and one of the bits of commentary between Gus and Mike, and also Gus and Walt, is he doesn't deal with junkies. And that's kind of talking specifically about Jesse. And you look at, I mean, I don't like to call anybody a junkie, but that's what's been described here, so I'm just going to use that word. And you look at this version of Jesse, and that does point more towards that, because he's being a bit more reckless and all that kind of stuff. And is he a junkie now? I mean, yeah, he's just come away from rehab and all that kind of stuff, so he's at least tried to, you know, sort himself out. But I think that those two things kind of link interestingly together, especially coupled together with this flashback and everything. So I thought that was quite good. What do you kind of think, if there's, it was something there maybe they were trying to get at?
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Mike is an interesting character as well. As I say, it's one of those characters that's very quiet, but when he speaks, it means something, you know. So
Yeah. Back in the present, Jesse is furious that Walt received the other half of his payment for the meth and calls him to demand it. Walt denies making any sort of deal of the half of the profits, for half of the profits, but nevertheless tells Jesse that he does not have his permission to cook his formula. Meanwhile, Hank is still searching tirelessly for the rolling meth RV. I think we should stop and talk about this Jesse thing for a second here. It is, because the deal at the start was, I remember specifically he said, I can't remember if it was in the pilot episode or the one after, maybe, he's like, I know the meth, you know the business, because it was, okay, he knows the meth, he knows how to cook this stuff, but his only source of a contact to get involved in any of this is Jesse, because of, he used to teach him and stuff. Other than that, his only other link into drugs in any way, shape or form is his brother, and that's not obviously going to work. He can't show up to his brother with meth and say, you know, hey, I want to sell this to save the family and stuff. That's not going to work. In fact, it's kind of interesting at the moment with obviously what Hank is trying to do. He's unknowingly trying to search for his brother, or is it brother-in-law? And that's, yeah, it's a very interesting part of the series, I suppose, of, and that's, we're halfway through season three now, and he's been doing that for most of the series so far, so I found that very interesting. But it's not got his name on it, he doesn't like legally own the thing or whatever, but to him it is his. And I think in this situation, it's a case of Jesse looks at it and says, okay, it might have been your thing, but I did this all myself. I cooked this and got the deal going, and I did it, and the whole of it is mine. But obviously, we talked about the ploy between, you know, Gus and Saul and all the other characters as to, okay, we're going to use this to, you're going to go and find Walt, give him his other half, to pull them back together, which was the whole idea from their standpoint. So, yeah, it's an interesting sort of tug and pull between Jesse and Walt. And again, makes up for some kind of interesting, somewhat sort of funny dialogue at points. What do you think of the whole tug and pull for the recipe, I suppose it is here?
Yeah, I mean, it's really funny the way that Walt basically is treating it like intellectual property. And sort of, my recipe. It's like, well, yes, it is, but you know, you wouldn't have made any of this happen had you gone into it yourself. I mean, Jesse is a key part of it, which is interesting when we know the history of Walt. And I mean, it, you know, because I can't remember how much of this is covered earlier on, but we know that Walt had this disagreement with the other couple where he was part of the company, and they went off and sort of turned it into this hugely successful thing, and so it makes sense why Walt is like that about this. And you know, but then he's also sort of doing that to Jesse as well, because he wouldn't be in this position at all had Jesse not been there. Jesse was integral to the fact that, you know, that recipe was developed, and you know, while Jesse couldn't have done it on himself, the distribution side of things Walt couldn't have done by himself either. So
yeah, it's vice versa, isn't it? Or
yeah,
vice
yeah.
Versa
I situation. Mean, you know, it was a very much partnership, and but Walter, I think, based on this history of what happened to him in the past, he's really protective of, you know, that property. So it's just really, it's a really clever bit of writing, because you see Walt's psychology there and why mm-hmm. he's like that about it. It sort of makes sense.
Yeah, good stuff. Meanwhile, Hank is still searching tirelessly for the rolling meth lab RV. He learns that his friend and partner Steve is being sent to El Paso in his stead. Steed's dead. Hank is left dismayed by this news, but nevertheless remains committed to his work. He returns home and has an argument with Marie after she shows concern for his well-being, feeling that he is being accused by those around him for simply doing his job. I can't remember if it's here or later. Let me just scroll through my notes for 1 second. Searches for the RV. There's a bit where, because he tries to go into this, like, trailer park sort of place, and he ends up climbing on top of this thing and scaring this couple and all this other kind of stuff as well. The other bit later on where I can see Hank in my notes is for where he's talking to Combo's mother. So I think it's within this stuff, isn't it? Because it's when that happens and he sort of goes back home and he feels like everybody's having a go at him, because I mean, For other people, it's okay, you need to go off to El Paso because that's where we're wanting to send you, but you've been insistent on, I mean, this got kind of sorted out last week with that scene with his boss. Well, I say last week, the previous episode. And he's very hell-bent on getting this, not just the RV, but the Heisenberg thing and, you know, the blue crystal, as he calls it. So this is all sort of tied in with that. I didn't remember that scene either, him, like, literally climbing on top of this RV and the thing on the top was open, he scares the couple and they sort of figure it all out. Yeah, I feel for Hank because he's not... I mean, apart from, you know, scaring that couple and stuff, which was just a mistake, he's not doing anything wrong. He's a very, very driven man. Driven, unfortunately, to the point where he does push other people away who are trying to help him. But as I said, the last episode, because I touched upon, like, men's mental health and things like that, and you can see how that subject and those themes are obviously playing a part in Hank's character and how that's affecting him and stuff. And unfortunately, sometimes with mental health issues, not just with men but sometimes with women as well, you don't always, it depends on the person and the situation, there's lots of different types of context, but I think if we talk specifically about Hank's situation, it's everyone's concerned about him, but he really wants everybody to just help him, rather than like, hey, Hank, are you okay? Are you this, are you that? And you should go off to El Paso. And it's just that coupled together with the accident and everything that's happened, which obviously would still be on his mind. I've felt for him in this episode because he's just trying to. He's a very, very driven man when it comes to this type of stuff. He's passionate about his work, and it's good to see people that are passionate about their work. There's some people that don't care about the job that they do, but obviously, if you get into a career that you want, rather than just a job that you'll have, a job that you actually want, and you're passionate about, and you're very driven to do, which Hank is, you can end up with this. But then, I suppose for Hank's situation, maybe another thing to consider is, because although he feels like, okay, because to him it seems like, if I try to listen to everybody else, I feel like I'm just being moaned at and not being listened to, rather than I'm going to listen to people who are trying to help me. But for him, that help is pushing him away from the thing he wants to do, which is the meth, the RV, and Heisenberg. So it's a tricky situation, and sometimes you look at the way sort of like Steve talks to him and the way that Marie talks to him, and for somebody who's trying to help somebody in a situation like this, it's a case of, okay, how much does Marie or Steve want to keep on and keep talking and keep, you know, like at some point you kind of have to leave somebody to have their own space and to figure things out and wait for them to come back to you, possibly. So it can be complicated and very, very tough. Obviously, this is a very unique situation involving a scripted TV show. But, it's a clash of kind of, Hank doesn't really want this type of help, but everybody else thinks it's a good idea. So, but as I said, I feel for him. He's just trying to do a job that he's passionate about, and trying to catch somebody that he sees as being bad. So, or somebody that is breaking bad. In this case,
yeah.
What do you think of Hank here?
Yeah, I mean, the like you say, he's just trying to do his job, you know. I mean, we get why he doesn't want to go back to El Paso, and you know, he would after that last experience. But you know, he likes to put on this tough guy image, and
it's both that, and he does want this blue meth thing. He's been tracking it for a while, so it's both things fighting against each other. I suppose.
And I mean, I do get that, and I mean, yes, he was using it kind of as an excuse to not go back, but. And I think the fact that Gomez has taken the job, I think he's probably there's this thing going on in Hank's brain of it being slightly emasculating that you know, he's the guy that he sees as his sidekick has got the balls to kind of go and do the job, which he's essentially trying to avoid. And whilst that's not what this is, I mean, if you're Gomez, you're going to go, well, you know, if Hank's not going to do it, I'm going to go and do it because it's a great promotion opportunity. And he hasn't had the traumatic experience that Hank had when he was down there. So, you know, I think there is, it makes sense that he would take it. You can't really blame him for that, but and Hank, to his credit, doesn't really lay into Gomi for taking the gig, you know, either. But yeah, I mean, the problem is that then he's at a point where he's looking for this RV, he can't find it, so the thing that he actually used as an excuse to stay behind isn't panning out either. So yeah, you know, that's sort of tricky, and you know, as we know, this cat and mouse chase goes on for a while yet. But
yeah,
I mean, yeah, it is a really interesting look at sort of this kind of the male, like, psychology of this sort of tough guy and how he's hiding things, and you know, it's a really interesting kind of rounded thing that they've done with that character. So
just on the male side of things, I mean, as we've spoken about before, I won't get into the whole diversity conversation thing again, that's not really what I'm talking about, but if you look at Hank, Walt, even Skyler's boss called Ted.
Yes.
With Ted, with Walt, with Gus, a little bit less so with Gus, but in a different way. Kind of with Mike, but in more of a subtle, quiet way. And with all the other male characters, their stories in this show are very sort of, again, a little bit less so with Mike, they're definitely with Sol to a certain degree, are about being in charge of the situation. If you kind of look across some of their stories, not quite so much with Steve. Steve's more trying to be Hank's partner in the field, whereas Hank is trying to be, you know, at times the big guy, which he's very good at doing. And obviously, what's the actor's name? Hank. Forgot his name, but he's very, very good at sort of portraying that and everything.
Hank, Dean Norris.
Dean Norris, that's it, yeah. He's very, very good at portraying that. And again, Jesse, he fits into that as well. It's not a bad thing, it's one of the central sort of parts of the show. But again, one of the central actual things of the show is Guy gets cancer, seeks out this venture's opportunity, gets carried away with it, and his ego gets in the way because of who he is. So it's one of the central parts of the show. So anyway, speaking of men talking about things, I suppose, Walt goes to see Gus Fring at Los Pollos Hermanos. That might have been the first time I've ever said that correctly. Admonishing him for giving him Jesse's half of the money in an attempt to lure Walt into Gus's employ. Gus apologizes for the transparency of the ploy, then asks Walt to take a drive with him in a final attempt to get Walt to accept the offer. Gus drives him to his meth lab, which is discreetly housed within an industrial lab facility. Walt is impressed by the lab and the equipment within, but nevertheless, declines the offer again, saying that his time in the meth lab business has cost him his family, and he cannot afford to make another bad decision. Gus tells him that a man provides for his family regardless of whether or not his family appreciates him for it. Yeah, men do provide for their families. So do women as well. But, you know, you have obviously your breadmakers of the family and that kind of thing. It's always such a great... I mean, you've got a lot of great acting all across the board in Breaking Bad. But there's certain scenes and parts that just stick out. And when you have a scene with Bryan Cranston and Giancarlo Esposito, unless you made a really, really bad script, that's usually going to go at least very well, if not brilliantly, just excellent. And just say, regardless of what the story is, what words they're saying, what the script is, what characters they're playing, just seeing these two kind of just going back and forth between each other, and that just, I mean, there's not a lot of like body acting and stuff. It's more just the emotion, the delivery of the speech, the facial acting at times, the sort of, how can I explain this, that the sort of stillness, especially from Gus, we know he's a very sort of like, the way he speaks at times, the way he moves, and the way he, like, we've spoken about it before, I can't remember how we've described it in like Better Call Saul, when he's like picking things up, putting them down, putting something in a case, or he's got this very delicate way that he does things, and they're both kind of doing that here. Obviously, within the first conversation at the desk, Walt does get a little bit more raised of his tone, but yeah, it's again that sort of mask with Gus of you you go in here, and I remember we've seen a few scenes in what some of the earlier seasons, and I remember when I remember there was a particular scene where it really stood out the first time when Hank went to go and see him. And he's like, no, I'm just this chicken shop owner, this chicken restaurant owner, and I'm the most innocent, polite, delicate man ever. Like, I'm just here with my staff, and my chicken. There's nothing else going on. And this just very kind of, it's just brilliant the way that Giancarlo does it, and Brian is obviously brilliant in the scene as well. Because the scene that does stand out more is just the them sitting down exchanging dialogue. Obviously, there's the other bit with Walt kind of being a kid in a candy shop here, of like looking around this place, and he's seeing all this really nice equipment, and clearly this took a while to put together, and Gus is trying to do this to get him back in, and there's all this shiny, new, nice equipment and everything, and Walt being the science guy, you can almost see as he's looking around, like the cogs turning in his head of like the potential here and what he can do, but then obviously the declines the offer, at least at the moment. I like the comeback almost, or the counter from Gus of like, obviously he would have been prepared for him to say yes or no. You'd have had to, but this thing about, because I think Walt has told him why, he probably has by this point, hasn't he, told him why he's doing this. And Gus uses the sort of comeback of a man providing for his family and trying to just reel him back in a little bit. It's just brilliant stuff between the two of them. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's always great seeing these two on screen. I mean, Giancarlo, the way he plays Gus is so wonderful and so quietly terrifying.
It's so sort of brilliantly delicate.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Just the deliberateness of the movements and the way that he portrays this sort of, you know, front, when we know he's an incredibly vicious man underneath, but doesn't come across as that like 95% of the time, you know. It's just superb. And I like the fact that, you know, he goes and drives him to the facility and he's trying to use that to sort of win him over, of showing him that it's this professional business, and that is, you know, he's showing it as a business opportunity. You know, he's not sort of, you know, it's not some cheap drug slinging sort of thing. And Walt makes the perfectly reasonable argument of like, well, Jesse, you know, I Gus is trying to sort of play it off as, well, you vouched for him, and he's like, well, I vouched for him under my guidance, not sort of like for you to go and use him on his own. That's a terrible idea, which, I mean, arguably probably would have been a terrible idea. I mean, you know, so yeah, I do. It's a great scene between the pair of them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Skylar White keeps enjoying her affair with Ted and is later told by Marie of Hank's change in sorry, yeah, of is told by Marie of Hank's change in behavior. Her sister claims that death changes people. I think we can agree with that. Prompting Skylar to reconsider her affair and her opinion about Walt, because obviously he has got cancer. After finding the large bag of Walt's meth earnings in the house and examining the money therein, Skylar speaks with her divorce attorney and confides to her about the fact that she is currently sleeping with her boss, as well as her doubts on whether Walt did what he did for the family. She's got a lot of things going on in her mind here. Her attorney encourages Skylar to leave immediately, for the longer she stays with Walt, the more culpable she becomes towards his crimes. Skylar remains hesitant, however, when she gets home. She is surprised to find that Walt has packed his things, including the bag of money, and left the house. He also signs the divorce contract, which has been there for a bit of time now, having finally accepted Gus's offer to continue his work in the meth business. Yeah, speaking of cogs turning, which is what I talked about with Walt in a different context, there's a lot of stuff going on in Skylar's mind here. The affair, did Walt do what he did for good reason or bad reason, or why is he truly doing it, and all that kind of thing. I got confused initially because when, I think it's in this scene, she starts talking about like more of how she feels and stuff, and her attorney here says, like, look, she kind of realizes she's sort of changing topic almost. And she sort of says to her, like, look, I'm not your therapist. What was it she said? I'm underqualified
I'm underqualified and over and o overpaid or something to be your therapist, I think, is how she
something like
phrased it.
that. And then she sort of said, you need to leave immediately. I was like, oh, is she kicking her out for that? And then she's like, no, you need to leave Walt immediately. I was like, oh, right, okay. Because what I thought she was kind of doing, again, this was another scene where I remembered this, obviously the Ted storyline, but not specifically what happens here. That's what I kind of thought she was doing initially, but that is true. I mean, she's got the knowledge that he's doing what he's doing, and the longer she does keep that from the law or doesn't do something about it, she becomes more culpable, which I hadn't admittedly thought of until she brought it up here, which I guess maybe Skylar herself wouldn't have been thinking of that, because there's been a lot on her mind anyway. Well, Ted's been one of the things on her mind, I suppose. But yeah, some interesting development here for Skylar, and one of the more useful ways to use Marie as well as this kind of supportive, trying to be a supportive sister and that kind of thing. I was thinking about something with Marie in this episode because she's in it a little bit more, isn't she? She has the Hank scene, and she has the scene here with that's Holly, isn't it, that she's with. I wonder if, now we've spoken about Marie before in terms of, okay, you don't really need to give her something to do because she has a role in the show, which is to be a supportive wife to Hank and, be a sister and that kind of thing. But in terms of actually giving her something to do, I think we said before, didn't we? In order to, okay, you don't need to make Breaking Bad a better show anyway. But let's say hypothetically, if you were going to go back, revisit the show, and look at Marie and think, okay, let's give her something to do, that you wouldn't necessarily make the show better. One thing they could have possibly done, and I only thought about it when we got to this scene, there's two ways you could have played it out, which is because she's like. Did I actually say what her job is in the show? I can't remember what her actual.
I can't remember, no.
Is it like an office job or something like that? I think.
Can't remember.
One thing they possibly could have done is like a stay-at-home mum situation. And I was thinking about that when she's like talking to Hank, trying to be a supportive wife, and then she's there with Holly. And I thought, what one way you could do that, you could either start the show with her being pregnant and then use that as a bit of the time. Or ha have the show open with her already having a child, And just so that in scenes where she could be, it could be a scene where she's on the phone to Skylar here, or when she's in person talking to Skylar or Walt or Hank himself, for her to have a baby. Now, I'm not saying female characters need children to be more interesting. Obviously, that's not what I'm talking about at all. I just thought of that specifically because she's with Holly in this scene, and from a I'll use the term physical prop department kind of situation. When I was just looking at when she's on the phone with Skylar, and she's got the dialogue to give to Skylar, but she's also got something she's physically doing in a scene, which is looking after Holly, rather than her kind of just walking and talking. Did you get what I'm trying to sort of get at? It would have given her something else which wouldn't have changed the series a ton, but it would have given her like a child to, like, because there's nothing wrong with being a stay-at-home mum. I know a few women that have been stay-at-home mums and stuff. Yeah, what do you think of if they did that as a as an idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think if there is one criticism we've always had about Breaking Bad, and it is, I mean, it's a minor one, but that character was always slightly underdeveloped, I think. Out of all the main cast, she was the one that really was given the least amount to do, and you know, the kleptomaniac kind of shoplifting storyline felt very forced and unnecessary, and like they put it in as something to give that character something to do because it didn't really serve a huge amount of purpose. So yeah, I think it's one of those things that I think she probably shouldn't have been main cast, and you know, not that there's anything wrong with the actress, you know, she's great in that role. It's just I don't think the part was ever big enough to be able to kind of justify that.
See, the way I'm kind of looking at it, if you take away the thief storyline, because to be honest, if you take that out of the show at all, I don't know that it makes much difference. In fact, I think it makes it slightly better. So if you take that away and give her a child, again, I'm not saying female characters need children to make themselves more interesting, because there's plenty of more than enough
Yes.
characters that prove that. But what I'm trying to get across is in a physical scene where she's, where you see her and she's doing something, whether it's talking on the phone or even if it's like visiting the White House or something, it would give the character something else. And that something
Yeah.
else, I think, would be more interesting. It'd be more interesting than what they do give her. But I mean, I look back on that and think not the character of Marie, but the thief storyline for Marie was probably Vince's one mistake, or Vince and Peter's one mistake.
Yeah.
But then in terms of trying to make up for that, they more than did that with what they with the brilliant character of Kim
Yeah.
in Better Call Saul. So
Yeah.
anyway, that's the stuff with Marie. Yeah, as I said, Skylar's got a lot of cogs turning in her head here, and she's trying to figure out what to do. Anything else you want to talk about with Skylar here?
No, I mean, it's interesting to see her sort of confessing this stuff to the divorce attorney, and I mean the divorce attorney is quite right, you know. She's confessed that she knew that Walt was dealing drugs, and the attorney can't say anything because it's her attorney, but absolutely right. I mean, if Walt gets caught, she could be charged as an accessory because of the fact that she knew and didn't do anything about it. Which is why the attorney's saying, no, you need to leave this guy. And but it's interesting that Skylar's starting to think about this in a slightly different way, in that, you know, yeah, and I mean he did do what he did for his family. That was the purpose that he set off down the road. Obviously, as he gets deeper into it, that becomes not the reason that he's doing it. You know, he's doing it because he likes the power of it. And you know, this is the descent of Walt into Heisenberg. But the it's interesting that she's sort of starting to come around to that idea, which is, I mean, is what he flat out said to her. You know, he put the money out on the floor a couple of episodes ago and going, you know, that is college tuition, that is a mortgage, and that was the initial reason that he did it. Arguably, he didn't even need to do that in the first place, because, as we said, if he put his ego aside, he could have taken the money from his friends and it would have been fine. I mean, we get as I mentioned earlier, yeah, we did find out what the relationship was between them, and but it's one of those things that, yeah, he did it for the right reasons. I mean, it not necessarily the right thing to do at all, but he did it for the right reasons. And she is sort of coming round to that. And it's also interesting that Walt has decided that, you know, if he is going to go back to cooking, he's not going to stay with the family. He's going to go somewhere else. And as well, you know, there's that side of things. You know, he's, although he did all this for the family, he's, I think that's an interesting point, because, you know, he's saying, I did this all for the family. And then when he decided to go back into the drug business, he decides to leave. And is the reason he's leaving to protect the family? Or is it because the reason he's going back into it is because he's doing it for his ego and not because they need the money? Because arguably at this point, you know, he's already got that huge bag of cash. He doesn't really need to make the money. He's going into this really for his own purposes. So yeah, that's the sort of step on the road to not being Walt to being Heisenberg.
Yeah. Speaking of Walt, he meets with Jesse in Solomon's office and hands over Jesse's other half of the payment. However, he coldly tells Jesse that it will be the last money he'll ever make in the meth business, which confuses Jesse, as Gus was only using Jesse to get to Walt working for him. Jesse is further enraged when Sol goes over to, this is so funny, goes over to Walt's side, renegotiating a money laundering deal to secure himself a cut of Walt's profits. Jesse tells him that this won't stop him from cooking, then leaves the office in a fury. He picks up a broken piece of curb and tosses it into Walt's newly replaced windshield. I had a bit of a, you know when you're trying to figure out something chronologically in a show?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, it's a broken windshield. And I was like, nah, the scene we saw a couple of episodes of the broken windshield at the start, that was, so this is a newly replaced one that he's mm-hmm. now had broken again. So,
yeah.
But when I saw that, I was like, oh, is that leading to, no, that was before that.
Yeah.
But anyway, this stuff's just, this really, really great. And Sol being this business guy of, to me here, Sol is looking at Jesse and, okay, Jesse's just been told you were used, basically. Mm-hmm. And Walt's just told both of them that, oh no, Gus is sort of, but Gus has basically got me back in. So Sol sees that and goes, ah, I can renegotiate and get in there and start, you know, doing the percentage talk and stuff. Although Sol does get a deal, he kind of loses here because, what was it he says, 20, he goes from like 20 and then Walt's like, no, 5. And he's like, oh, 10, 15 or something. He's like, no, 5. And then he tries to go a little bit above 5 and he's like, no, 5. It's like, so you're losing the negotiations here. This kind of reminds me of some recent football transfers and stuff where like, what was it? Because we were going for Mason Mount, who we've got now. And Chelsea went, we want 80. And Man United said, here's 60. And they were like, that's 70 something. And then we were like, 60 plus 5 in add-ons. And then it just went on and on. So it kind of reminded me of that sort of thing. I guess you go halfway, don't you? And then you work towards the middle of that, I suppose. So, which is sort of what Sol's trying to do, apart from, because in the end, we got Mount for, I think it was 65 plus 5, which was not really what we wanted. In this situation, it would have been, nah, you're going to give us the 80 obviously in this case it's the 5%, but it's Walt's determination of, because for Walt here, he doesn't really, I mean, Sol's useful to him, but he doesn't, he's very insistent on just, no, I'm just going to leave and just go and see Gus. And it's only because Sol steps in and starts negotiating.
Yeah.
And to Walt, it's kind of, I don't have to settle for more than 5, so I'm just going to keep saying 5. And Jesse's just standing there the whole time like, what the hell has just happened?
Yeah.
So, but it's, again, we kind of talked earlier with the Gus and the Walt scene of just sort of this casual calmness that they both sort of deliver. This calmness on Walt's face and with Brian's acting of, he puts the money down and he's like, this is it for you, basically. Is this the last you're going to get? You are being used. And then just stops talking there. And the look on Jesse's face of, like, no, I arranged this deal, because he thinks it was all him, doesn't he? But mm-hmm. And then Sol's there kind of looking at the two of them and sort of thinking, okay, which one can I, they're kind of breaking up a bit here, which one can I make money from?
Yeah.
So it's brilliant stuff. It's really, really good stuff. What do you think of this scene?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. And Bob Odenkirk, there's a reason why Sol got his spin-off. It seems like that, where he just comes across so wonderfully. And it's... Yeah, that negotiation scene and the way that Sol kind of turns and basically turns back to Jesse, because Jesse's like, hey, you're my lawyer. And he's like, yeah, it's just business, kid. You know, I just thought that was great. It's really, really good. And understandably, Jesse's kind of really upset. You know, I mean, that's, again, it's Walt, very cold, very Heisenberg. I mean, you know, I think this is the point where he actively makes the decision to lean into that side. I think this is, although we've seen Heisenberg pop up as sides of his personality at some point, I think this is the first time we really, really actually, he makes the absolutely active step to, like, I'm going into this drug business.
To be in control of this.
To be in control of this. And so I think this is the point where he actually kind of starts to embrace that. The sort of back and forth. Oh, poor Jesse. I mean, you know, thinks he's got some control over this. And I mean, clearly he hasn't. It's all Walt and Gus, and he was being used. And I what's nice is I can't actually remember exactly, because we know obviously they end up working together again, but I can't remember how he ends up getting drawn back into working with Walt again, and the reason for that. But
Because at this point in the series and in the season, especially the last what, 2-3 episodes, they hate each other. I mean, you look at the car scene where Walt tells him off like a dad almost, of like, oh my god, you went and did this, you used my formula. But again, the whole power control thing for Walt, which again is one of the central things of the show, it starts off with that, because it's, wait a minute, you used my formula to go and do this deal to benefit yourself, and you didn't like tell me or anything. And then it's, you know, no, you were being used, and because it's my formula, it's my thing. I was just using, because for Walt here, it's kind of, I was using you to get into the business, because it was, again, I know the crystal, you know the business, or I know the science, you know the business, but I've got Gus now, and I don't need you as much anymore. So Dave, there's a couple of points across the series where they kind of hate each other, but that's also what makes some of the best moments and the best parts of Breaking Bad, because it does have scenes like this that have got comedy parts in them, just because the way they exchange dialogue. Because if you remember, like, it back in, or was it maybe season one, they had that fight in the RV and they got covered in chemicals or whatever it was, and all that sort of stuff, and there's other parts that are sort of similar to that. So yeah, just seeing Walt's relationship is very interesting across the series. We finish off with Hank's search for the RV leads him to the doorstep of Combo's mother, because there was just that one more RV that hadn't been checked, or it was something like that. who never reported her RV stolen after Combo sold it to Jesse, which we see in the opening. Hank searches Combo's room and finds a picture of Combo and Jesse during their night at the said strip club, again in the flashback, thereby leading Hank now to set his sights on Jesse. I remember a scene between Jesse and Hank. Has that come up yet? I don't think it has. There's one where he's not interrogating, but questioning Jesse. I don't think that's come up yet. Because by this point, he's just starting to figure things out. Because this was sort of him moving away from the El Paso stuff, going into the Heisenberg case. I think that scene is coming up. I don't remember them doing that just yet. It makes sense because this is probably leading towards that scene. Yeah, it's a good end for the episode. It's kind of a sad bit as well, obviously, with Combo's mum. You can understand why she didn't have reported, and there's no real point doing that now because obviously he's not around anymore. So she's just kind of left it as is, and she's tried to sort of make his peace with that and everything. So it's quite sad from that part, but because he was the one that he's got shot in one of the openings of the episode, didn't he? Just
yes,
in the street from that kid.
He was working a corner and got shot by a rival by a rival gang, didn't he?
Yeah, which is usually something you'd see in The Wire. Kind of thing. So, but no, it's kind of sad. But it puts Hank on his next piece.
Yes.
It also kind of, this whole thing also kind of proves how, not just how determined Hank is, but how good he is as well. Because nobody else is really quite looking for this, and he's like, "No, I'm gonna get this Heisenberg. I'm gonna get this crystal," sort of thing. And just detective way, you know, piece by piece. Finds the thing, finds the RV, then finds Jesse, does all the camera stuff with the ATM and all that. So he's getting there, and we shall see where it leads to. What do you think of this last scene?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's really it's a really kind of nice way of putting Hank back onto the right track. And you know, the combo kind of thing, because he's, you know, obviously he's aware of that shooting, and it pushes him back towards Jesse. So that sets up some, I can't remember the exact scene, but I'm fairly sure it's a scene between Hank and Jesse and Sol, I think, as well. I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. So
yeah. Which is interesting because we've both already seen it. So
It's just that's been the great thing about doing this rewatch. Yeah. It's been so long since I watched through this show. I can't exactly remember how everything plays out. So you know, I remember sort of how it ends, but the story of how you get there in the exact moments, and I remember certain plot points, but you know, I don't remember exactly how it plays out. So yeah.
All right, well, that's the end of the episode. We do have a couple of bits of feedback. If you would like to send in any thoughts, feelings, questions, comments, whatever you've got, either about Breaking Bad or anything else that we cover, Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, Twitter, eTalkUK, and there's information in your show notes. Notice how nobody is calling it X. And I think tweets are now called posts. I noticed yesterday.
Yes.
Because usually when you used to tweet, it said your tweet's been sent. It just said your post has been sent or something.
Yeah,
good stuff. Well done, Elon.
Yeah, he also killed TweetDeck yesterday as well, which is you might not have used TweetDeck, but TweetDeck was quite a useful thing that a lot of people like that follow lots of lists, and I mean, you know, general public, and it's quite useful for journalists and stuff to be able to schedule posts and also to be able to keep track of certain hashtags and all that sort of thing. And it was a nice easy way of seeing all that sort of stuff. He's now stuck it behind the paywall, so you've got to be a Twitter Blue subscriber to get it, and I am not paying Elon Musk money, so
no. Anyway, that's Twitter. You can use that to send us stuff if you want. Anyway, Jake writes in and says, with all three of these all said and done, do you think Better Call Saul ever had a chance of being better than Breaking Bad? Can you think of a show that was better than its original? I personally think of Personally, think of Better Call Saul. Sorry, if Better Call Saul was shorter and tighter, it could have been. So it could have been, I suppose you're saying, better than Breaking Bad. I try to now keep in mind whenever we get spin-offs of stuff that, okay, don't go in hoping or expecting it will be better or equal to the original, because it doesn't need to be. It depends on what the spin-off exactly is. But Better Call Saul's good in its own way. It is a bit of a different show because it's obviously a different story and stuff. Does tie very, very nicely into Breaking Bad and does wrap that whole universe, franchise, whatever you want to call them these days, very, very nicely. It actually gives a bit of an extension to things as well, especially with Saul. Did it ever have a chance? Had a chance, but it never needed to be. And it's interesting that, because if you fundamentally look at Better Call Saul and what it did, there was less going on in the show than there was with Breaking Bad. But I suppose as you got deeper into, because we used to get, what, one Gene scene each season. It used to be like a cold open of an episode. And then you get into the final season and you actually get Gene episodes, which we're not going to delve too much into that because of spoilery stuff. But it had less going on at the start and then built more and more upon itself. Plus, you've got the very interesting character of Kim, who's just a phenomenal character and brilliantly, brilliantly played by Rhea Seehorn, who deserved a lot more awards than what she got for the show. Just remember the other day she's working on the Apple thing with not Bryan Cranston, with Vince Gilligan. That should be very, very good. You put Apple TV Plus, Rhea Seehorn, and Vince Gilligan together. There's just endless potential there. That's a lot of good stuff. I don't think it quite had the chance to be better than Breaking Bad, although some people do think it's better than Breaking Bad. And if you do, but if you still enjoy both shows, then cool, that's good with you. Although I noticed, you'll notice with online chatter, recency bias is a very, very, very powerful thing. Somebody will see something, compare it to something in the same field, and say instantly, this thing was better than this other thing. I remember when, just a different example is, remember when Zack's Justice League came out, and there were comments immediately of, this is better than Endgame, this is better than Infinity War, and it's like, okay, let's. You might have that opinion, and that's totally fine. You can think whatever's better than whatever. But it's because we as humans, we come away from enjoying something a lot, and we come away from the high of enjoying something and thinking, wow, that was incredible, and it's the best thing I've ever seen. And you push out everything else you've ever seen because that's the most recent thing. I remember later on in Better Call Saul's more so fifth and sixth seasons, particularly the sixth season, and it really started to get into more of the drama stuff. Because earlier on, it was a bit of the more of the Saul Goodman stuff and all that sort of thing, and it was a bit more comedy based. There were some dramatic moments, but it started to turn more into a drama as it got into its later seasons. And as it started to get more into its dramatic storylines, which was still fantastic stuff, and we really, really enjoyed it, because you'd watch the episode, it'd be really brilliant, the credits would come up, and you think, wow, that was amazing. And some people took to Twitter and whatever at the time and was like, I can't believe how good this is. This is better than Breaking Bad. That's because, and that's probably happened to me a few times. I've probably watched or played something and thought, wow, this is the best thing I've ever played, because you're in that moment of it. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what some of us can tend to do. But I noticed that happening in Better Call Saul's later seasons. Because I remember in some of the earlier seasons, let's say like seasons 1 and 2, it was, oh, this is a little bit slow, and was this worth doing? And because the thing is, when you make a spin-off of something very, very popular like Breaking Bad, and you go, oh, is this necessary? And do we really need this? And it's a bit like with Walking Dead, you know, they come out with the spin-offs and stuff, and it was, oh, do we really need it? And there's questions posed about it and things like that. But to me, as long as a spin-off's got a good enough idea on its own and is not just, hey, here's this more of this thing for you. So that's some of my thoughts on that. It had a chance to, and some people do think it's better than Breaking Bad, which is interesting to me. I still maintain what I've said this whole time. One of the many reasons, but one of the main reasons I think Breaking Bad's the best show I've seen is because from pilot to finale, forget Better Call Saul and El Camino. For the individual show itself, it's the most consistent show I've seen. There's other shows that get very, very, very close, and there's a number of shows. I talked about the whole top-tier prestige thing. A lot of those things sit on that shelf. But from just from keeping the clock ticking and keeping things ticking and moving and having your quieter, more relaxed moments, you have to do that. But then being very, very, very well-paced from pilot to finale is the main thing. And keeping that quality, because there are some shows that you watch the first two seasons, you're like, this is absolutely incredible. And you get to the fifth season of some shows, and you're like, what's happened to this thing? that's where you can, okay, writers have run out of ideas, or whatever's happened, the quality has dropped, budgets have dropped, whatever's happened has happened. Or writers have run out of ideas, or they can't keep churning out that exact same quality. But Breaking Bad does that from pilot to... I mean, there's other shows like, you know, Working Moms is an example I used. I remember when I did my final season review recently, and one of the things I said was, yeah, from the pilot to the finale, it's incredibly consistent. Breaking Bad's still better and still more consistent, but that's like the main thing to me. Plus, it's just brilliant in its own ways. Anyway, that's my very long answer to that question. What do you kind of think?
Well, I mean, I would, the other part of that question was sequels that are better than the original. Has that ever happened? I would say, I mean, it's tricky with some shows because the sequels can be very, very different things and different animals to the show that they're spun off from. So, you know, I think that is true with Better Call Saul compared to Breaking Bad. I mean, you sort of want to compare them because they are spin-offs, but they're doing slightly different things. I mean, I would argue that Strange New Worlds is a massively better show than Star Trek Discovery. Just, I think, the writing quality is consistently better than it has been on Discovery. I still like the both shows a lot, but Strange New Worlds, I think, is consistently a better show.
Is that also because, as you and other people have described, and this isn't really where I fit into that, you've said that it's sort of more like Star Trek that you expect, as opposed to what Discovery offered?
Yeah.
Which isn't something that came up, because that's not how I quite view Star Trek in that way, because obviously we're from different points and stuff. So.
Yeah, because you don't really know the original series. So,
yes.
But I think... Overall, I think the writing quality on Strange New Worlds has been better than the writing quality on Discovery. But yeah, there is... I mean, I do like both shows, but they are doing quite different things. You know, one's very much an episodic thing, one's very much an overarching story with Discovery, whereas, you know, Strange New Worlds is much more episodic. So then that will be one example of a spin-off being better than the original, I would say. I mean, obviously, they're not... It's also difficult because they're not shows which have completed their runs either. It's Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. They're shows that have completed runs, so you can sort of directly compare the entire thing from start to finish. And I would say, yeah, in most cases, spin-offs generally aren't better than the originals. I mean, you could argue again with Star Trek, you could argue Next Generation, I think, is a better show than the original series, but it wouldn't exist without the original series. So, and again, that's not, but, you know, Next Generation isn't consistent. You know, there are some awful episodes of that show as well. I'm trying to think of other examples of...
Do you think with, I'll say, the reception of Game of Thrones, right, with the more so with the seventh and eighth season, because from what I understand, the House of the Dragon content is that's already done, isn't it?
Is done.
Do you think that has a chance of, because it will be able to follow its source material and not have it be created or manufactured, which is what Game of Thrones had to do, because George took too long to, well, he's still writing the books, isn't he?
Yeah.
Not in terms of will the shows be better. I wonder, because fans of source material are very, very particular about that, about things being accurate and, well, the source material existing in the first place. I wonder if, let's say that follows its source material from beginning to end, however many seasons that's going to last, and ends, let's just say, critically better than Game of Thrones, because it'll be, oh, you stuck the landing because you went through the source material and you did this and that. I wonder if that has a chance of happening. I'm not saying House of Dragons is going to be a better show than Game of Thrones, and I don't think it will end up being as big, because Game of Thrones is a massive, massive phenomenon of a show. I just wonder from a reception standpoint if those people who've read the books will look at that and think, oh yeah, you managed to get there, but obviously the situations are different. I wonder if that might end up happening. It's a bit of a different example, but I wonder if that might be the case because of the source material.
Yeah, that is a possibility, I would say. Definitely. Just because the fact that the story is finished. I mean, and the problem with Game of Thrones is those up until the final season, or arguably the last couple of seasons, in some people would say, it was a fantastic show. So I don't know. That's going to be an interesting one to see, but there is a possibility that could surpass the original. I mean, I would argue that Angel was a better show than Buffy the Vampire Slayer, even though it didn't run for quite as long. But I think consistently, Angel was probably a better show. And I mean, it's weird because in some cases, the spin-offs you'd think should be better because they have the experience of having created the original, so they sort of should know what they're doing by that point, you know. So I don't know.
Mike writes in and says, bit of an odd question perhaps, but can you think of a couple in a show that had specifically an affair and you wanted them to be together instead? Hopefully my question makes sense. Yeah, you're probably talking about Ted and Skyler here. I'm trying to actually think now of other affairs on for characters. There's been a lot of like I mean, you asked specifically about affairs. I don't know that I can answer it from that angle. There's definitely been a lot of couples that, you know, you have the off on again, off again thing with different characters and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, Friends is an example I've used of for different things. It amazes me. Just going back to that a little bit, and I guess talking about the Ross Rachel stuff, because there's Ross Rachel and then there's Chandler and Monica. The more and more I continue to slowly go through Friends, the more and more I dislike Ross as a character. He is a bit controlling, and if something doesn't quite go his way, he does not have a very good reaction to things. The whole we're on a break thing is funny as well. Yeah, but like I mean, in that case, that's like, to me, I mean, some friends might be like sort of shocked or whatever at this, but Chandler and Monica are a much better couple than Ross and Rachel. And there's even bits between, because they have obviously on and off again through the whole series. When they're in like a proper off state, there's like nothing really between them. So I'm almost rooting for like those characters to be with some of the other, because you know they all go on different dates and they all see various different sets of people throughout the series. And I remember the first time I went through Friends, and I was getting towards the end. I was like, okay, I know they're going to end up together. There was nothing between them at all. And then I was like, how do we get there by the series finale? And then it happened, and I was like, oh, okay. But that's, I guess, one small example. In terms of specifically affairs, I can't think of one really, but yeah, that's I guess that's sort of my answer to that. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm struggling to come up with an affair in another TV show that comes to mind, to be honest. So I
What
can't
about
really
just
answer
what
that.
about like on and off couples and stuff?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm struggling to answer that one, to be honest.
There's a few stuff here and there, and I mean, I don't watch it anymore. I watch Alex's videos on it, but like the Riverdale stuff. It's funny
God,
looking
yeah.
back at like Archie and I can't remember the names of the characters, Veronica, and they were like deeply, deeply, deeply in love. And then obviously there's all sorts of time travel and they get powers and
Yeah.
there's probably
I
aliens in the
mean,
show or something. And then they all sort of end up all with each other like rotationally at different points. So that lost its whole sort of shipping thing because everybody ended up with everybody at a different point. So it's like, okay, there is no sort of that sort of thing in there. What was you about to say?
Yeah, I mean the only things that really sort of come to mind are some of the teen dramas, which you mentioned Riverdale, but yeah, I mean Buffy. There are some very creepy relationships in that show because you like Buffy and Angel. Angel is at like hundreds of years old, and ends up dating a 16-year-old girl, and hanging around her school. And I mean, it's the same with the Vampire Diaries. I mean, they go on about oh, loving, cute relationships and stuff. Or Twilight. I mean, it's always a problem with particularly with vampire things because you've got these people that have been, they might look like teenagers, but they've been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, and always end up with a sort of 16, 17-year-old girl. And you're like, that when you actually think about that, that's kind of creepy.
So, that sort of answer to that, I suppose. I suppose one other way to answer that, do you prefer Skyler with Ted or Walt, if we're to relate it to this show?
Arguably, Ted isn't a. Well, you see, that's the thing. You say Ted isn't a bad person, but he is cooking the books at these office. I mean, that's. There is that. I mean, yes, he's not a meth dealer, but they've both got their kind of faults. And she does seem a lot happier with Ted, to be honest. I mean, I was thinking about this. You do wonder what really attracted Skyler to Walt in the first place. Because he's just slightly neurotic, but yeah.
I was just randomly thinking about this now. You know when they showed that scene of Skyler with the book open and she was like pointing bits out and I made the Man City joke of you've been cheating here and here and here. You know when you use the term cooking the books, that is exactly what they've been accused of
There
doing.
you
So
go.
it wasn't even a joking comparison. It was among other things that they've done because there's 115 charges. Cooking the books is basically like lying where your income has come from.
Yes.
So, yeah, that is interesting. Anyway, all right, that's the end of the podcast. Thank you all very much for listening. If you'd like to find our other content, you can find it over on entertainmenttalk.org for TV, games, films, main night podcasts. Take a look out for what we do. We're in the full swing of things at the moment. Gaming talks going on, doing Breaking Bad, or about coming up to the halfway point of season 3. Man United have just come back, so there's going to be a lot of that. Film reviews going on. I'm watching some stuff for some TV reviews. There's always things going on Entertainment Talk. So check it out if you'd like to. TV, games, films, main night podcasts, entertainmenttalk.org, or find us on your favorite podcast platform. You can also listen to other stuff that we've done. Word of mouth, social media, let other people know about what we're doing and where they can find it. Patreon, if you'd like to do that, $5, $10 level tiers. There's only the two of them for the ad-free podcast and review options. Go and have a look out for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news. If you'd like updates on the strikes or renewals, cancellations, air dates, when shows are coming back and all that sort of stuff. We're getting into that point again where loads of stuff started coming back again. I'm going to have to go and watch some shows because I'm falling a little bit behind on certain things. Anyway, that's geektown.co.uk. And Geek Town Radio on Tuesdays. David, that is run by you. What is going on over there?
Yeah, well, we came back with another episode of the Geek Town Radio podcast. That is episode 392. Bex, aka Trista Bytes, was on the show as the co-host for that week. It's always great to have her on because she's really
I
entertaining.
loved
But she,
her mocap story. That was funny.
yes, the there is a story of her doing the Macarena in a purple mocap suit, which is highly entertaining.
Of course, yeah.
But Buffy does come up on that show. We do talk a bit about that. She talks about Silo. She does a review of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Mutant Mayhem as well. We talk a bit about Strange New Worlds, Only Murders in the Building, Strange Planet. There's stuff about the strike in there. If you want to know a bit more about what's going on with the strike at the moment, we talk about that. Yeah, there's lots and lots of stuff on there. You can go and find that at geekdown.co.uk and wherever you get your podcasts. There is, of course, also various news stories going up, cancellations and renewals and air dates for when shows are coming back, all that sort of stuff. You can also find at geekdown.co.uk.
Excellent. So go and check out all of that. Bex, as we said, Trista, B-Y-T-E-S across, I think she said she's on like every
She's literally
social
every
platform,
social media
so,
at this point, yes.
Yeah, you can't miss her. But go and support what she's doing. Go and check out what she's up to. Twitch is kind of her main thing, but go and check out what she's doing. Us, Twitch, eTalk UK for all that. And just a bit of an update on the YouTube channel. Not a major update. I've put some new COD content up on there. Some stuff that was really funny. There was this... I've got some fire shotgun ammo, and this player slid towards me. I shot him in the head, and his body flew across the screen. And it cracked me up, so I recorded that bit. And there's also some other bits and stuff on there as well. I've still got, I kid you not, probably like 40, 50 game clips on my PS5 to upload. But I can't really do that in the background or do something else in the background while I do that. So I will figure that out at some point. That goes all the way back to when I was playing Dead Space and stuff. So check out that YouTube channel, which is Entertainment Talk Players. Anyway, thanks very much for listening, and we will catch you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.